There are certain things you can't ignore. You can't ignore the black church. It's the fastest growing part of the church. So you're going to have to engage with us somehow.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. I'm Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity Magazine. If you have seen our latest issue, you will know that gracing the front cover this month is Pastor Agu, the pastor of Jesus House Church, one of the biggest churches in London. And this month, he's been sitting down with Heather Tomlinson to share something of his life story, how he came to faith, his views on prayer and revival, and also his views on wider societal issues as well. And this interview that you're about to hear was recorded at ARC, that stands for the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, held its inaugural conference late last year. You may have heard about it in the press because one of the founders of ARC is the famous psychologist Jordan B. Peterson. Well, Pastor Agu is one of the people involved in ARC, and this is a new forum to try and deal with the biggest issues facing our society today. And so you'll hear Pastor Agu touch on some of those issues in this interview. Without any further ado, let me hand you over. This is Heather Tomlinson in conversation with Pastor Agu.
So Pastor Agu, it's fantastic to have you here. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us at Premier. We're here at a conference, very interesting conference, the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship. I believe you've been involved in the organisation, the developments of it. Do you think this is the start of a new era of engagement of Christians and politics, and bringing the Christian message into the political sphere?
Well, I think it's not just into the political square, it's into the public square. I wouldn't say this is the start. There are many others things that are happening, but this will certainly contribute to that.
Your background is a very interesting one, and you trained as a lawyer. And you worked as a barrister, is that right?
I worked as a solicitor more than a barrister.
And in investment banking as well?
Yes, that was my passion at one time.
So what inspired you to go into law?
Well, I think he was a lawyer. And yeah, as I just grew up, I thought that's what I'm going to end up doing. Probably 90% or more of us in our family are lawyers for that reason. And that's why I ended up, doing a law degree. I soon found out just before I finished that I didn't really want to do that. And that's how I ended up eventually in investment banking.
Okay.
And then found out that I didn't want to do that. So here I am doing what I guess I wish I'd found out at the start. Because now I love what I do.
So you had quite a radical conversion, is that right? In the 90s, when you became a Christian. Can you tell us about that?
I always thought I was a Christian. I was born into a Christian home. And I went to church now and again to please my mother. Certainly on Easter Sunday and Christmas and stuff like that. So when I started searching, and it was a very interesting period in my life, my father would be considered a very well-off man, so I wasn't lacking anything material. I had a great job in an investment bank, and so he was making more money than a young man has any right to make. Very social, very, very social, and so very hectic social life. So in a sense, all was good. But there was just something that was missing, which I couldn't put my finger on. And in the quieter moments, I would spend time wondering what exactly is not right. I mean, you're earning this money, you're a young man, you have all this, this hectic social life. Your material needs are taken care of, not just because of your salary, but because your parents are well off. So what is wrong? And interestingly, I didn't think it could be anything to do with my faith, because I thought, I'm a Christian, And then, I guess I began to search because those moments got deeper and deeper. When all the lights were out and you were on your own, there's just something that was missing. There was a big yawning gap in my life. And then I began to think it must be something to do with God. And the first place I turned to was in Christianity, because I thought I'm there and it hasn't solved it. And so I began to think, could it be any of these other faiths? And then I remember some of the actors that I liked were into all kinds of feist and faith. And I began to think, could it be that? Bless her soul, my late wife, who then was just a friend, pointed me in the direction of this church and said, I think you like it. Loads of young people, stuff like that. Now, the way God works, at the same time, literally in the same week, a lady in the investment bank who has become like a spiritual big sister sits on the board of Jesus House and is very involved spiritually. Great woman of God. Also set mention of this church to me, and I thought, that's interesting. So I went to church. I'd never been into a Pentecostal church. I was thoroughbred Anglican. And I'd never seen anything like that. I'd never seen so many young people in church. I'd never seen so many young, happy people in church. I'd never heard music like that in church. And that was the start. I thought, like, you know what? I'm going to come back. I never had preaching like that. I never knew the Bible could be relevant in that sense. And I thought, you know what? I want to come back. And I went back a few times and quickly figured that this whole thing centers around this Bible. And I thought, I asked my late wife then, I said, can she get me a Bible? Interestingly, I was a Christian. I didn't have a Bible. That tells you the state of my Christianity. And so she got me a Bible and I started reading the Bible. But I was trained as a lawyer, so I read it as a legal book. And that's the worst thing you can do, because it's not a legal book. And so I found too many places where it didn't add up. You know, there were loads of questions I had, and I would write out all these questions. She would stop by, answer some, and some she just couldn't answer. But I was on the journey. And somewhere along that journey, reading the Bible, what I now know was the Holy Spirit working on me. I didn't realize then. I just began to think, this could be it, you know. And, the rest is history. At some point, I came to the conclusion that this is it. And it was very dramatic for those who were around me, because it was a radical change. Most people thought I'd lost my mind or something had gone wrong, because it was very, very radical. I just literally stopped a certain kind of life, most of it, and then threw myself into bliss.
So it must have been radical left for you to give up that, the good income, the great social life. So it was powerful enough that you could give up these material things.
Well, it didn't happen immediately. I mean, the social life was rearranged immediately. Which was a whole big deal within my social circle, because I was very, very social in that sense. And then I worked for a bit. I left investment banking and decided to set up a law firm, and, you know, a law firm that would do good, because now I was into doing good. Got two other partners who also had just come to the faith. We started that. But very soon I got involved in church, and increasingly more and more involved in church. And I just found fulfillment in what I was doing. The thing that drove me from a very young age was I wanted to help people. So my going into investment banking and law was really for me to raise material resources so that I could do what I wanted to do, which I felt was to go into politics, so that you can bring change to people. Now, it was interesting that I found myself in church and found that what I wanted to do, which is to serve people, help people, touch people's lives, I found I was doing it in church. Okay. And increasingly so as I got more and more involved. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So what do you think has most helped you to grow spiritually, to grow in your spiritual journey?
Without a doubt, prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing I would commend to any Christian who's starting their Christian walk, it would be to develop a strong prayer life. You know, it's the crucible of our relationship with God. Everything comes out of that. And I try to get people not to see prayer as a thing, but to see prayer as a relationship and the outworking of a relationship. And if you spend time with God in that relationship, all the rest falls into place. So I would say prayer.
What does your prayer life look like? Like, how do you, are you sort of disciplined, or is it more of a kind of when you feel the Spirit moves you? How tell us about your prayer life.
Whenever I'm asked that question, I use my wife as an example. So just so that the different sets of people understand it's okay. God works with us, I think, to a large extent through our personalities, which he's given us. So my wife, Shola, is a very, very disciplined person, extremely disciplined person, very diligent, very meticulous. And her prayer life is like that. You know, you can set your clock by Shola's prayer life. She doesn't miss an appointment with God. She's up early. You know, she's very ordered. She has prayer journals. I can tell what Shola is praying about by just looking at her wall, because it's all scribbled there. She's very organized in her prayer life. I'm not like that. I think a measure of discipline is needed, which I hope I'm getting. I think, you know, before you get into the delight of prayer, there has to be a measure of discipline. But I'm not mega organized like Shola. So I think there's a bit of flexibility in my prayer life. I think God allows that expression. And that's been my own story with God. So of course, you know, I have a certain measure of discipline, and you know, my quiet time generally is around this time. But even then it could be, and then for the next week it could change.
But it sounds like a living relationship with God, or the experience of the presence of God, is important to you.
Yeah, very important. And like I say to people, it's not a religious thing; it's a relationship thing. So let's not put prayer in a religious box.
Yeah.
Let's understand that prayer is the outworking of your relationship with God. So whilst you can pray on your knees by your bedside regularly, you can also pray on the tube. You can have conversational prayers with God. You can pray when you swim, like I do. I mean, it's just that whole, you know, God being central to our lives and us being able to talk to God about anything and everything, including, do I go into Starbucks or do I go into Costa Coffee? And then the more serious things. But it's God enjoying being a part of our lives and us getting used to talking to him about everything.
Yeah, fantastic. So I think a big part of your ministry has been encouraging and developing men in the faith, and so men's ministry. How important do you think that is to our society at the moment? And how concerned are you about the epidemic of fatherlessness?
I mean, it's very important. I wouldn't say it's more important than, you know, ministry to women or anything. Of course not, because, you know, God doesn't put the man above the woman or any crazy thing like that. God is very clear, male and female, he made them, and they have the same level. But I think that I don't know the exact stats, but I know that if a woman comes to faith, there's a certain percentage in terms of the family coming to faith. And if a man comes to faith, it's you know, really two or three times that or something like that. And there's in a sense, I feel that society has confused a lot of men. And I feel that there's a sense that we must put a clear picture before men of who they are, what their responsibilities are, especially their responsibilities to women and to children, either as wives or friends, as fathers. And I feel, you know, that's really very important. I think churches do a lot better, much better job with regards to reaching out to women than they do to men. And I think if we're not intentional, we might miss out on a large chunk of men who could be better husbands, better brothers, better workers, better citizens, better in everything, just because they get a clear picture of who they are and who God would have them be.
What would you hope to see in the church in terms of being better at reaching men and better at outlining that vision of what a godly man is?
I think understanding the challenges, that the peculiar challenges that men face, because when you understand it, you can deal with it. I think knowing that it's not one size fits all, that there are particular and peculiar challenges to men, and then there are particular and peculiar challenges to men in different cultural settings or different communities. So it's understanding that and being able to, you know, deal with that. I think the church needs to do a much better job at that. I think encouraging more men into leadership in the church. I pastor a church, and the women are going to throw themselves forward to serve. You know, from the minute they're in the church, what can I do? Where can I help? You know, stuff like that. But the men will sit at the back and watch for a while and try to figure out, you know, where exactly is this thing going. So we've got to be very on the front foot in engaging them and encouraging them to come in to serve. I think role models are a big thing for men. So putting before the men role models, you know, men. Yeah, it's just a thing with men. Just you see somebody who you admire, you just want to, go and be a part of what that person is doing.
So you are passionate about revival, about seeing renewal in our nation. What does that look like to you? What do you pray, hope, and dream for this country?
Well, I think I pray for the way I would put it is, I said to someone recently, I said, the kingdom just has to come. And that's the picture for me, that this message that John the Baptist announced, let's see the manifestation of it. Let the kingdom come. The kingdom values, the things that we know are kingdom values. And I think that would counter a lot of what we see that are definitely not kingdom values. And there's too much of that in our society now. So it's actually a wake-up call for the church and for us as Christians to get out there with this message of the kingdom and to live it. Because that's the most effective way of preaching it, is to live it, so that people encounter the kingdom through you. So all the things we, you know, the love, the respect, the heart of service, the patience, all the many things that we know are part of the kingdom, the positivity, joy, you know, yeah.
Are there any particular social issues that you're especially passionate about addressing?
Yeah, there's a whole load of them. I don't even know where to start. That tells you how bad things are. I mean, you could start from poverty, which is very dear to my heart, like, because I'm also Nigerian, African, you know, and there, you know, poverty stares you in the face. And the paradox is that there's so much wealth and yet so much poverty. So poverty is a big thing. And you see it here in England. I mean, you would imagine we'll be talking about poverty in Africa or Asia, but I've seen some extreme poverty here in England that we've tried to respond to. So I think poverty is big. I think the spirit of the culture that we now find ourselves dealing with, the toxicity, the lack of tolerance, the cancel culture. You see certain expressions that are vicious, you know, wicked almost. And you just wonder, where did this come from? This wasn't like this you know, 20 years ago, 10 to 20 years ago. So I think, yeah, those are major issues. I think you can't run away from the whole debate around sexuality. And those are things we've got to deal with this day and age. And if they're not complex things, if we dealt with them in a kingdom way, you know, if we were tolerant, if we were respectful, if our language had kindness in it, if we agreed to disagree and respected each person's position, then these things suddenly are not as complex. They become toxic and complex when we throw that out of the window, and when our position is you must endorse my position, and if you don't, then you're the enemy and I'm going to go for you. And that's where the whole thing falls apart.
And you've been a direct target of that. I mean, as someone who sounds like you used to be interested in getting involved in politics, but when Keir Starmer came to visit you and when Theresa May came to visit you, then there was a backlash and the press was saying that they shouldn't be going to visit homophobic creatures. I mean, how did that make you feel, and what can we do about it? It feels like they're wanting to exclude a huge part of the church from the public square. What do you think?
Well, I used to want to go into politics until I became a preacher and pastor, and then that kind of put paid to that. I think in our day and time, it's an occupational hazard. I think we must accept that there will be some measure of persecution. And when we compare it to the persecution that's going on in Somalia or northern Nigeria or, you know, northeast Nigeria or Pakistan or India, I mean, you know, it kind of just pales into insignificance. So if they write a few things about you and they call you a few names and you get some vicious, some letters that have vicious, insulting words in them, it's okay. If compared to, you know, someone who's wife has been beheaded in front of him or whose children are excluded from school because they serve Jesus. So it's okay. It's an occupational hazard. I think, you know, that if we're going to stand on the truth, then we must expect that there will be some attacks for standing on the truth. There's just no other way it's going to happen, because the people who don't like what you're standing on and are not gracious, engaging in what I would call a kingdom way, are going to engage in the only way that they know. So that's, and that's not to say it's everybody. I mean, I've met loads of good people who have a different opinion. Some of them I have good relationships with, and we agree to disagree. And because they know that I respect them, I respect their opinions, but they also respect me and respect my opinions. And we can agree to disagree. So I have met people like that on different issues. So yeah, it's just it's what it is. I mean, you know, fortunately, there are certain things you can't ignore. You can't ignore the black church. It's the fastest growing part of the church. So you're going to have to engage with us somehow, because elections turn on numbers, and we have numbers, and the numbers are growing. And the black church is a sleeping giant. If it wakes up, its influence is significant. So politicians are going to have to engage with us. As long as they're in the game of politics, they're going to have to engage with us. So I would say to them, let's arrive at a place where I respect your position, you respect my position. I respect you, you respect me. And we agree to disagree on certain issues. At least we can agree on the certain fundamentals in terms of the kind of society that we want.
Do you think the Black African Christian community is unfairly targeted or discriminated against? Because when I look at the Christians who've lost their jobs because of expressing views about LGBT issues, that when I see those Christians, a lot of them come from the Black African community. I mean, do you think that this is an aspect or an element of discrimination or racial discrimination?
I think whether black, white, you know, Asian, I think if you stand on the truth, doesn't matter the color of your skin, you're going to get persecuted for that. So I don't necessarily think it's a black thing. I think it's just certain people have stood on certain things that they believe this is the truth. And, you know, we live in a world where everything is deconstructed now. There isn't any truth they want us to believe. And, you know, some of us are saying, no. If we go down that route, this whole thing is going to collapse. There must be certain things that are the truth. And so, yeah, we'll stand on it. And you'll get shot at, you'll get, you know, knocked a bit. But, you know, it's okay. It's an occupational hazard, I always say.
Start the year enriched and enlightened with thought-provoking Christian content from Premier Christianity magazine. As a special New Year offer, enjoy a year's subscription for just £24. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com.
So, in my fellowship with people from the Black African Church, I would say that the church as a whole has a lot to learn in terms of being willing to speak the truth. So, about everything, about the gospel. So today, you know, you were very clear talking about the kingdom of God, talking about Jesus. And sometimes maybe people from the West can be a little bit more afraid and pussyfoot around the subject a little bit, and they're nervous about talking about Jesus clearly and explicitly. So what would you say to the church? Do you want us to kind of, do we need to really get behind that truth and have more confidence or more courage in preaching the gospel clearly?
I think so. I think the early church, I mean, if we're looking for an example, we couldn't get a better example than the early church. So what caused the spread of the gospel was the boldness of the early Christians. Sometimes they lost their lives for that boldness. And I think the church needs a dose of that. I think political correctness has gone way overboard. So that now, you know, you can't speak the truth. I think the truth should be spoken. I think it should be spoken with kindness. I think it is wisdom to be sensitive to people and people's affiliations or where people are. I think all that is absolutely necessary. But I don't think that should water down the truth. I think the truth, the message of the gospel is that the truth can be spoken with kindness. And I think that the church has to do more of that. I think We've sadly taken it too far so that we can't even stand up and declare that this is who I am. I'm a Christian. I'm a lover of Jesus. That's who I am. And, you know, I should be able to declare that freely. No matter the setting I'm in, I should be able to say, you know, let's get this out of the way. I'm a Christian. I'm a lover of Jesus. I happen to work in an investment bank, or I happen to be a politician. I happen to be, you know, a nurse or a doctor, but I'm a Christian and I'm a lover of Jesus.
So finally, to finish, can you tell us what is the most amazing thing that you have seen God do in your life?
Well, there's so many. I mean, if you took out my salvation, I think my marriage to my second wife, Shola, is very dear to my heart because she's absolutely amazing. I just cannot imagine what my life or the children's lives would have been, you know, without her. She's such a blessing for God. So that was very amazing. And then my son was very ill, very, very ill. You know, was he going to live? Was he not going to live? And medicine played its part. And that's, we must always acknowledge that God uses doctors as well and uses nurses as well. But ultimately, we knew it was God using doctors and using nurses and his young, strapping, 30-year-old boy, looking at life, loves his God, very passionate about his career, actually the kind of model that I think we should be as Christians, lives life to the fullest, loves God, you know, passionate about his career. And yeah, that was a big one for us.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for giving us your time today, Pastor Agu.
Thank you. Thank you for interviewing me.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.